What's up and welcome back to another kind of funny Ahsoka breakdown. Of course, I am Tim Geddes. I'm joined by the saddest boy I've ever met, Barrett Courtney.
Faith? I lost that a long time ago.
There we go. And joining us once again, of course, we have Anthony Carboni.
It's a good day today, Tim. It's a Star Wars and Starfield day. We're double starring, and I love it.
Double star, baby. And rounding out the group, we have Sage Ryan.
Look at my hat. I'm Ahsoka Tano.
Oh, I like that. I like that. That's good.
It's me, Ahsoka.
We're going to be talking.
I thought Ahsoka was here with us.
I'm going to be talking all about Ahsoka Episode 4, The Fallen Jedi, today, directed by Peter Ramsey, aka the director of Into the Spider-Verse.
That's
pretty
right.
Cool. Oh, okay. Damn. One of the because there was like a few directors.
He was a co-director on Into the Spider-Verse.
And Peter Ramsey's been directing the last few episodes, and I believe I was looking into it. Yeah, I believe
he's been on the Disney Plus Star Wars train for a little while.
Yeah, I think
he's been doing some solid work.
Filoni directed episode 1, and then Peter Ramsey, I think, has directed episodes 2, 3, and 4.
No. So Filoni did 1. Steph Green did 2 and 3.
Steph Green. Okay,
Peter Ramsey's only done this one.
And then Filoni's directing next week, Timmy.
I believe Peter's done a Mando episode.
Okay.
I think that was his live action premiere was doing a Mando episode, but
he did chapter 21, The Pirate. Would have been one of the season 3 episodes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, he gave us the grassy pirate man.
The Moss Man. Yeah.
You'll love to see it. You know what else you love to see? This show. And it happens every week on youtube.com/kindoffunny or roosterteeth.com if you want the video. If you want it as a podcast, though, search your favorite podcast service for Kind of Funny Screencast, and we will be right there for you. If you wanted to go above and beyond, patreon.com/kindoffunny is where you want to go. Just like our Patreon producers, Jedi Master Deadpool, James Hastings, Casey Andrew, Logan Delaney, Nathan Lamothe, and Patrick Delgado. Today, we're brought to you by Shady Rays and DraftKings Sportsbook. But if you're over on Patreon, you won't need to hear those ads. But for everyone else, you know, there'll be some ads. You just got to deal with it. Anyways.
Deal with it. Wow.
Let's get into our thoughts on Ahsoka Episode 4. Barrett, I want to start with you.
I really enjoyed this episode. It's interesting coming off of like Episode 3 last week, right, where Tim, you and I were kind of talking about like the first two episodes, we got a lot of like Phantom Menace vibes, and then last week's episode, we got a little bit of a New Hope, and we were wondering, like, going into the kind of middle part of this show, are they playing around with tones throughout this entire season? Are we going to get a little bit of Empire? And I got a little bit of Empire here. Not like very specific like callbacks or anything, but just like overall kind of vibes where we're at in the story, and I really enjoyed it. There's a lot of moments that I really loved, whether it was the action, like the one-on-one robo, like Rock'em Sock'em Robots fight, which was fucking awesome. Just the fight with Marok and the apprentice, who I think we finally got like her name actually said out loud today for the first time.
Yeah.
Shin. Mm-hmm. And then you know the actual like fight between Baylan and Ahsoka, the last moment, which I know we're gonna talk about more in depth, that actually like brought tears to my eyes, just because of how big that of a moment that meant for me as a fan of these characters. It's one of those things, like, not much plot-wise happened in this episode, right? Like, we didn't move off this planet. The kind of entire crux of this episode was like this sequence of dialing in the kind of the calculations for this jump, right? And that's pretty much the only thing that happens in this episode that's like moving the plot forward, but there is still so much going on here that I ate up. And similar to last week's episode, where it's like it's a bit slow moving, but I feel like it's done a bit more with purpose, that I'm not finding myself kind of like checking my phone a lot or anything. Like, I feel so bad for Alyssa now that these are coming out at 6 p.m. where she's also watching. She's a huge Sabine fan, so she's like excited to watch with me, and I'm pausing like every minute to like take like notes and all that stuff. But I really enjoyed this episode.
Anthony, what about you?
Barrett, how is Alyssa, as a huge Sabine fan, feeling about Sabine's choices this episode? And do they feel like they make logic, like internal logical sense for the character. We'll get into this, but here's what I'm saying. I did not like Sabine's choice in this, and it did not make a ton of sense to me.
And we can have a little bit debate on it. It definitely felt like a moment of weakness, and Alyssa pointed that out for sure. But there's some specific things said in this episode that made me like, oh shit, she has another chance, a second chance to actually have the ability to save someone she sees as family when she wasn't given that choice, which we learned in this episode the first time around. I see it. I personally see it.
I see it. I see what you're saying. I completely disagree, but we'll talk more about it. I did like Hu Yang having to go up against an HK droid. I thought that was hilarious.
Stellar.
I like seeing Carson Teva coming back. I like seeing all the good rebels who understand what's really going on coming into play here. And this was I also love how quickly the Marok is Ezra theorists got
or Star Killer or any like literally 15 other different characters.
Theories made any sense at all.
And now I think it's even cooler to theorize about. Wait, where
was
it's
he
like
Night Sister?
Is there
magic?
Some Night
what
Sister shit going
that
on?
That was cool
he
as
was
shit.
He was definitely a Night Sister zombie. He was probably because they've done that before. He was definitely 100%. Like a dead Inquisitor,
which is so sick.
Yeah, that's it's very awesome. Cool.
We love Night Sister magic in this house.
Yeah.
Sage.
Okay. Look, it's one of those super dark Disney Plus episodes where you got to turn the brightness on all of your devices all the way up. I thought the episode was fantastic. I enjoyed it very, very much. I loved getting to see in the beginning some banter between Ahsoka and Sabine and kind of like the relationship building between the three of them as a trio with Hu Yang. I thought that was really fun. And I thought there was a lot of those little moments that were like throwing towards it, were foreshadowing that like stay together, work together. Can I trust you? You know that you can. And then they said, screw that, throw it in the trash, throw it in the trash. We don't care about that. What did you think we were foreshadowing? If you thought that, you're a dummy. essentially, which is very, very interesting. And I know that we will get in more into the like Sabine debate, but I do agree with Anthony that I was shocked by the choice just because there were so many moments leading up to that I was like, ah, okay, I see. Baylan is employing like a force empathy, essentially. He's using that to tap into the most vulnerable parts of her. But also things like Ezra, for instance, are very surface in her vulnerability. She's not private about it. Everyone knows this about her. So it's not like he tapped into something so deep and dark and secret. It is something that she is very actively pursuing. So shouldn't be, I don't know, that sensitive. Tapping into her family being killed in like the sweep of Mandalore, obviously a deeper cut into that, revealed a little bit more about it, revealed maybe a divide between her and Ahsoka that was very interesting.
Yeah.
That she was already training under her. Maybe there was something that like Ahsoka could have done, or that Sabine could have been there had she not been with Ahsoka potentially, and feels like she could have done something about it. But still, in every one of those moments when she's holding the gun on the little like wayfinder thing, I keep thinking, well, she's waiting for him to be done with this, and then she's going to shoot him. Obviously, this is where Baylan dies. This is the moment. It's going to happen at some point here. Even if he's able to tap into this information, we just got the foreshadowing of, can I trust you? And this is her moment to prove it. And live up to it, having just watched Ahsoka, in her mind, fall to her death. We know Ahsoka's not dead.
As ineffective as it was, she used the Force for the first time. She got a little shoulder shove. Plus, these people stabbed her through the heart and belly. Like,
I will
she
say,
knows not to trust them.
The
like,
action
it was very odd.
Now, some people are speculating that it was actually like force manipulation and not just it was beyond empathy, but empathy to manipulate, and that she is under some kind of control. I'm not in that camp of thinking she was under some kind of control.
I think she's
especially based on her reaction.
She's not that weak-minded too, which is the thing.
I agree.
No, because when they show, a moment later, the choking and everything, then she starts acting like somebody is manipulating her with the Force. But until then, it's just very like,
but
I'm chill.
Seeing her show up and use the Force, seeing her have to pull out her lightsaber, her get her Mandalorian helmet knocked off, and also just as people who like follow the Mandalorian of her different relationship with her helmet is very interesting to watch it get taken off in battle. And you have that little like in your heart of like, a Mandalorian has had their helmet taken off.
And the way she uses her armor to block when like the lightsaber gets taken out is so good. What she does, her like pathetic.
That was such a good combo of like Jedi and Mandalorian tech and magic. That was such a fun and cool moment. I loved the action in this episode. I loved Ahsoka's fight. I thought that was brilliant. I loved watching a zombie Inquisitor explode. I loved this episode overall.
Mm-hmm.
I loved this episode. I don't know that I could have loved it more. Like this show so far has just been delivering for me. I love all the character stuff. I love the action in this. I can't believe that we're 4 episodes in to a Disney Plus series. And I feel like everything that's happened so far, I've enjoyed. We have a clear path forward. We have enough room to get there.
Yeah.
Next week's not the finale. This feels like the type of episode that if we ever got this in any other show, next week would have been the finale.
This would have been the penultimate episode of Mando Season 4.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, man. We got room. We got 4 more episodes to go where we're going, and I can't wait to get there.
And the insane thing is, like, I don't know where you're feeling about this. Of like, I'm so excited for next week's episode, and not for a reason I would have thought like 2 weeks ago.
Exactly.
Which is insane.
Exactly. And it's directed by Filoni. We're about to get some crazy shit next week. But my thing is, unlike you guys, I just spent the last couple of weeks watching Rebels for the first time. 4 seasons of Rebels. So what does that mean? I have seen Sabine purposefully get captured and then crawl her way through space vents 1,000 times. This makes a lot more sense to me when you look at it through that frame of reference where it's like, oh yeah, this is Sabine, baby. Yeah. And yeah, you know, to your guys' point, I do think that it I was a little bit caught off guard, but I think that to Barrett's point, which I feel like I side more on, she is, with the reveal of losing her family semi due to Ahsoka, due to them being partners, whatever that was, and that resentment towards it all, this being a second chance to get Ezra, who she's clearly looking at as this, like, the only sign of hope. Star Wars is always about hope, right? And the idea that Ezra could still be out there, her final family that she can actually latch on to, that she feels never, like, betrayed her or anything. I think that is so interesting. And
which is so upsetting when, like, Baylan is definitely, like, using the Force to, you know, get some of her thoughts of, like, how he talks about, like, he's the only family she feels like she has, like, even though Hera is still out there and Jason, and it's like, fuck, man, like, the splitting and, like, the events of the finale of Rebels, like, really messed her up in a lot of ways than maybe we could have ever predicted.
But I think it goes even deeper than that, and it goes to Ezra represents something to her. It's not even just Ezra himself. It is more just the idea of her feeling hopeless and lost, and knowing that there's something out there, it's the grass is always greener type thing, right? And just knowing that she has something she needs to overcome.
Yeah, I just wish at this point they would stop hinting so much at the rift between Sabine and Ahsoka and show us a little bit more of those events.
Yeah.
So I could have believed Baylan's gambit and her falling prey to that just a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Don't make your female leads passive aggressive.
That's the thing, is I want to know. I mean, I just want the show not tell of this thing between Ahsoka and Sabine.
Same.
I want somebody to mention something material at this point. I want somebody to mention an exact moment, not just a hint of like, oh, master, you screwed me over. And it's like, well, you know, she says I screwed her over, and I kind of did with the thing. And then, like, it's been 4
What's
episodes of being like, ah, yes, with the thing that we all
here's
know.
Here's where I agree with Anthony and Tim in this, in that, A, I think they've kind of revealed the thing in, it's in twofold of two things. It is, one, the Mandalore, and two, Ahsoka abandoning her, right? Yeah. Like, that's the twofold of things that Sabine has to be resentful of. I wish that we would explore that resentment in the way that, like, the Jedi Order raises you to, like, let go of emotion, and Sabine cannot. I think that we're hinting at that, but I agree. I wish we'd get into it. But we did spend a good amount of this episode with this conversation between Ahsoka and Sabine, and Ahsoka being like, you have to give up Ezra. I'm sorry, if it comes down to it, I'm not picking him and you shouldn't either, which did leave a door open for this choice to happen. I just wish that we had seen Sabine react a little more to it at the time. Like, I wish we had seen a little more of her pain leading up to this, so it looked like a less weak choice.
Real quick,
Carboni, let me cut you off here, because I do want to take a quick word from our sponsors, then we'll get right back to you. Go for it, Carboni.
Yeah, I do wish, when you're talking about passive aggressive, and I'm talking about being shown and not told, I think that's more what I'm talking about. I think it's more like I want to see less of Ahsoka speaking with her arms crossed and Sabine kind of going, oh gosh golly, and walking off set. Like, I want to see, well, we have to give up Ezra, and if we have to give up Ezra, that's because we're saving the galaxy. You know, I would have loved to have seen, and I think in Rebels, we would have seen a little bit more of Sabine going like, hey, that's not cool. Like, I want a little bit more of the punk rock Sabine that we kind of knew in Rebels, who would say to Ahsoka, this is just like you. You're always talking like this, and it's garbage, and I don't like it. That's all I want.
I see this as, I agree with you, but I think that this is, we're seeing Sabine, and I feel like the passive aggressiveness, I read it more as her internalizing it and trying to not be the emotional Sabine we've seen before. This is her trying to please Ahsoka. This is her second chance.
This is her 10 years later after we've
trying to understand the Force and get these powers, and it's not working. And I think they showed that really well, explicitly, with last week with her trying to move the cup and like joking about the cup and all that stuff. Yeah. Like, I just feel like the Sabine we're seeing now is the Sabine we know, but she's trying to be something different. And I think that that's where we're seeing her kind of a break, and it can kind of feel like not aligned with the decisions.
I can agree with you on that. And I don't think that it's too late to explore that emotional turmoil. I just want to see it. I hope that we get to it.
Especially where we leave off and where we are specifically at the end of this episode, where, you know, maybe there's opportunity to literally look at the past. I think there's an opportunity there for sure.
Yeah.
There is the back and forth debate of, I want Ezra, but also Ahsoka's kind of my dad that left and just came back, and I do want his approval.
Yep. Yeah,
and
totally.
To leave that whole, like, oh, you know what she did to you on Mandalore, to one line still from Baylan is like, okay, now we do have an idea of what happened, but buddy, I need to see and hear and experience this. Like, this is a character trauma, and I need to be...
We'll get there.
I need to see it. That's all. And I think we're four episodes in, and like y'all are saying, I think we're in a good place to see that next time. But it's time.
It is a weird, especially with this being a weekly thing. I agree with you there of like, it's a weird story choice to have it come out this way. Maybe like in retrospect, when we see it as a full episode thing, when we know everything, maybe it makes a little bit sense if you're able to see it and know it all. But in a weekly kind of reveal, I think I agree with you there for sure.
Now that said, let's talk a little bit about Baylan in this episode and some of the fight choreography that Ahsoka's fighting style, where she's like, they're using Rosario's theatrical and ballet background.
Oh yeah.
Oh, the thing where she's like using the henge as like, like strength and to like.
Yeah, she's two-hand fighting when she's been using multi-weapons. She's two-hand single-saber fighting now.
And she's got that leg back against the henge because Baylan is so huge and strong. And she's like, okay, well, how do I hold up against this guy who we talked about this last week? His ring is literally fake. It's a prop. His hands are so huge, they had to make that ring, and it's not real. So, like, that's a big dude. So using her environment like that was so amazing to see. Like, the fight choreography in this episode was brilliant.
You know, I always, again, just watching Rebels for the first time, I finally got to see the Twin Suns episode and seeing like how amazing the Obi-Wan Maul face-off actually is in context of it all. And, you know, just the one strike and how powerful they can be story-wise when it's built up. Seeing a very similar thing here with the Inquisitor or whatever, the Maroke, spitting the thing and then her just coming in like slicing him versus her fight with Baylan. I really loved how Street Fighter this all felt, like pro Street Fighter level, where it's like you see two people playing against each other, they figure out each other's techs, they figure out the techniques, back off for a bit, and then go in for it, and then change things up and go back in. Like, it was like, yo, these are pros. These are people that have like learned how to saber fight forever, the different styles that they even talk about in the episode.
And like, she has like different stances for how she's battling Maroke, how she like starts off with Baylan, where she makes her sword like feel like even more heavy when she starts that off and like weighing it down. And then also shout out to Shin, is that the apprentice's name? Yep. She felt so much like Anakin.
She's sick
with like
fuck,
her shoulders. She uses her shoulders. I noticed this too, Barrett. She uses her shoulders in a way that they had Hayden use his shoulders.
Yes.
Where it's like big emotional movements and like asymmetry, and she's always squaring up and like moving her weight and like.
But then also there's like a level of tenacity.
Way.
And there's a level of tenacity there as well that just like, I feel like we've only ever really seen that with Anakin because of like the range of emotions, and she's kind of at that. We don't really know much about her or what her like inner strife is and all that, but there's definitely something going on there where it's
we don't see a lot of people force choke either. So
there's
a couple of similarities popping up there that are very interesting. And obviously like Anakin is a theme throughout this episode, which I'm sure we'll get to in a second. But when you see her fight, you actually see the contrast. Like Tim was talking about how like these are pros between Ahsoka and Baylan, with the contrast of people that are not in the fight between Sabine and Shin. When you're watching that fight, it's two people that are definitely not fully trained. And it's the only reason that I think Sabine is able to keep up is because Shin fights so emotionally and Ahsoka has trained Sabine to fight so strategically. So when she is pulling from her lessons and her centeredness, the only reason she can keep up is because Shin fights so angrily and emotionally.
Shin's got that Sith apprentice thing going on too, where she's like, oh, I'm better than you. And so she just takes that in and internalizes it, and it makes her sloppy in a way that it made Anakin sloppy.
God, I loved the fake out too, of just like her closing the hands. And it, like we said already, of just like the best mixture of just like slight Jedi training and everything she like knows as like a Mandalorian fighter. I think she's like, you have no power. And I wrote down in my notes of like, you don't need the Force if you have other abilities to use in a fight. Like the Force, I know the Force is technically in canon and all that, like everything, but like it isn't everything. And I fucking love that Sabine kind of like put that in her face for a second.
Well, I have a question for you guys.
Go on.
Did Sabine use the Force?
Yes.
There was a little bit of a push against her shoulder.
There was a sound effect, and then, it did seem like she reacted.
Like,
she knocked her saber arm back.
Yeah, so I saw that, but like it was weird to me where like I couldn't tell.
The editing is weird in that moment.
If it was like
it's because Disney Plus doesn't let you select SDR instead of HDR, so you couldn't see anything that was going on.
It wasn't that. It was more just like when I saw it, I first thought like obviously they're trying to make us think she's about to use the Force, but I thought it was even Shin almost like preparing for it, like preparing for the hit as opposed to actually being Force affected.
Yeah,
because then her read of it.
Pull it back to the Mando like rocket thing, then I would have been like, okay, like she definitely like used the Force.
They used the sound effect, and I don't feel like if they didn't use the sound effect, I feel like I would. It was a weird editing moment where like I see both, and like the first time I watched it, I definitely had your read of like, oh, she used that as like a fake out moment to then like do the Mando thing. But then I don't think they would have used the sound effect if that didn't mean.
I took it as a brief and fleeting use of the Force.
Yeah.
Out of desperation.
It was good too. And you're right. I think that's something that I love Hu Yang. I've always loved Hu Yang as a character. And I think it's something that Hu Yang in his way has been telling her the whole time. It's like, you're a terrible Jedi, but don't worry about that. Like, just learn as much as you can and use the skills that you have, and don't worry about the fact that you're not going to be doing like flips with your hands behind your back like everybody else is doing. Like,
yeah.
If the Force doesn't work, you've got Sparrow missiles. Use them.
Totally. Like, and then so one thing that I thought was really special about this episode that I can't really pinpoint any other moment in Star Wars that I felt this way about was the Ahsoka Baylan fight, where when we first get to this little like set piece where they're in the cool little star map situation, and then we know there's this ball that's the map that is the centerpiece of this whole arena, essentially. My first thought is like, why doesn't she just fucking Force pull the thing? Game over, we're done, right? Mm-hmm. But they have a moment where Ahsoka looks at it and like, you get the vibe that she's thinking that. She's thinking, yeah, I just need to pull it. But then she looks at him and she doesn't. They set the stage for, there's a Force power going on in this area right now. He is almost emitting Force. And that's when she starts getting in the different poses. And the way that fight plays out with him being so aggressive and like Carboni was saying of her using the surroundings, it just felt like a way more, it wasn't just about each strike being made. There was a presence around them that was changing, the impacting the way that they were able to fight each other.
Right.
And seeing Ahsoka deal with that, I was like, this is cool as hell.
Yep.
Yeah, there's
a
always been a
environment
thing,
being a third person in the fight.
Yes.
Yeah, and there's always been that thing where when a Jedi is, or a Force user is being distracted by a Force user of equal or greater power, they don't have the space to do simple things. Like, we've seen it happen before where it's like, well, why didn't he just pull that? It's like, well, because he was fighting freaking Darth Vader at the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they just don't have that ability. But there, I think there's a lot of others, like there's this old magic going on or old technology going on too, where it's like, maybe that thing is not easy to pull out of that. You know what I mean? Without being there and using intention. And you do see the fight towards the second half being very directed around that. Like you're saying, Tim, they really started making the star map the focal point of shots. So you knew they were both thinking about it the whole time. And I love that it really just comes down to her just grabbing this flaming hot orb of magic and just being like, no, done, over.
Yeah, and I did like that, to the point of like, why didn't Sabine, like, we don't feel like Sabine would like do this, like she should have shot the thing. I do like that they showed him having to saber it and like stay for a second to like break it, where a blaster shot wouldn't have done anything. Like, I like that they showed that, like, regardless of the call she made the right call, because otherwise it just wouldn't have done, like, it wouldn't have worked.
I didn't think she'd shoot the orb. I knew she wouldn't give up her chance to meet Ezra, but I thought she's literally aiming it up like this with him on the other side. I thought she was just gonna bing.
But we saw her shooting at him and he was just bop, bop, bop. Like, it was like us playing a video game on easy.
There was literally a point where he turned around too.
Yeah, he had Ahsoka like over the
one. He turned. It was after he'd had Ahsoka, after they had gotten to the point where it seemed like Sabine was giving in. He, you know, his lightsaber, and he turns having accepted that she has given in.
I thought psychological warfare like that too, where it was like, I'm luring him in. He's holstering his saber. And he's like, hey, we're buddies here, right? And she's like, yeah, we're buddies. We're buddies. Like, and then I thought she was going to do something.
There's every chance he would have sensed that too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's every chance he would have sensed that.
Really quick, leading up to that, I loved the moment where Shin arrives and Ahsoka takes that as, oh, Sabine's fucking dead, and takes it out on Shin. And then in return, Baylan takes it out on Ahsoka. We're like, it just in that 10-second sequence, you, even from both sides, you see how much these masters care so fucking much about their apprentices.
Dude, the strength with which she throws Shin up against that rock was
non-magical.
She was
violence.
There to like fucking kill people, man.
Non-magical violence in Star Wars, even though it is magical in the way that she's throwing her, but hitting a rock is very jarring in Star Wars and very effective when it's just like, oh, that's just head to rock.
And so my last like little detail that I want before we get into like the kind of final minutes here, I loved how slow the calculation was for the jump to this other galaxy. Like, usually for galactic jumps, it's like 30 seconds, you know, or maybe a minute, like Han has to take a little bit of time to jump over to where they think Leia's dad Alderaan. Is. Yeah, Alderaan. And Luke's like, oh, like, fucking jump away. They're coming on us. And he's like, you know, like, I got to make all these calculations. But that usually doesn't take 10, 15 minutes, right? And I loved that. You just get this slow calculation over like the entire course of the episode to really sell of like, they're going a far ways away. I don't love how slow it is. And then in the last like minute, it's like, all right, the second half is going to take way quicker. It's like,
well, it's MacGuffin time.
Yeah, it's MacGuffin time. But MacGuffin I feel like time. You could have had the moment if Morgan showed up on the ship. Maybe it's just at the last kind of dial. It doesn't still need to be halfway.
But I love how slow it happened, but that it happened this episode. I feel like other shows, it would have been like, we're three episodes away from this thing actually happening. We fucking see them take off into hyperspace. Yeah. And not only do we see that, one quick moment I want to talk about before we talk about the very end is the whole Hera of it all, right? Her getting the rebels together. Once a rebel, always a rebel. Holy shit, this is awesome. Her and the Ghost with the X-Wings all coming in. I actually had fear. When we
the
have them
fear.
In the circle, it is like a straight up...
I had to pause the episode and I was like...
Don't
I was like, we know the Ghost is in Rise of Skywalker somewhere, so the Ghost has to survive, good right? Call. It has to, but I was like, but maybe Hera and like Jason all of them still die.
Don't you put Jason in that ship and point that ship towards that ring right now.
And the fucking... Stressed. Again, tenacity of it, where it like shoots off and the fucking after effect it has on all of the ships, and like three of those X-Wings fucking die. Like,
and then Jason, they're feeling the Force, you know?
He's got a bad feeling.
It's like it's
not about this, but he's got a bad feeling.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So
it's just in general.
That stuff happened. We are wrapping this up, but we can't wrap it up before we talk about the biggest fucking reveal we've seen in Star Wars in quite a while. Sage, kick it off. I want to hear your thoughts on this.
Anakin appears in this place. We're dealing with a lot of conversations about like the spaces between universes right now. We don't know where Ahsoka is or exactly how this has happened. They're in some sort of cave setting. Anakin appears to her, not in the last outfit we see Anakin in, but instead in the robes that Ahsoka would recognize him in, greeting her as Snips. What's very interesting to me, though, is the Vader theme.
I know.
Yeah. What does that mean?
I don't know. And and so it seems like the world between worlds. I don't know if it's exactly the same place. As we know, Ahsoka has been saved before and pulled into the world between worlds by Ezra.
At a moment that she is about to die.
At a moment that she's about to die by Anakin, by Darth Vader, the moment where she's like, in a moment where she fully accepts that, yes, this is what happened to my master. And so now the big question is, like, how did she get pulled back in here? Is there more? Alyssa was like, did Anakin pull her in? And I was like, I don't think that quite makes sense. I think Anakin is probably a Force ghost here, but I don't know, like, how still she got into the world between worlds. Maybe she's in a weird Jedi afterlife thing.
But so here's the thing, having just watched Rebels with the World Between Worlds episodes, there are moments that aren't real there. Like, there are like they're not holograms, but it's like they look real. And like, even in this, he's not Force ghosty. He looks real.
Yeah.
But like, we saw like Palpatine like talking to Ezra, but it wasn't actually him, right? Or like,
I think that was him though.
But Palpatine then made Ezra see other things that looked real that weren't actually real.
That wasn't that the space. World between worlds, though, I don't think. You're thinking of like the when he gets to see his family and stuff, and he's like, oh, like, go over here. This is a possibility. I don't think that's the same episode of like him saving Ahsoka and stuff.
But the world between worlds, the Virgin Scatter exists in between time and space. It is entirely possible. Like, here's the thing. You're seeing Anakin. Anakin could be dead. Anakin could be alive. Anakin could be visiting her from any time, from any space within Anakin's life and within her life. That's the cool thing about the world between worlds. Mm-hmm. The playing of the Vader theme is the fascinating thing about this, because it is, and it would hurt me very much, because to hear Hayden Christensen say Snips in live action, it would hurt me if this was manipulation by Vader or by the dark side while Ahsoka is in the world between worlds. It would hurt me.
Yeah, that's
but it could be.
I didn't think about that possibility.
Hurt me. You know, like, ooh.
Just the hay snips. Like, for context, like, very early on in the Clone Wars, that was the nickname Anakin gave Ahsoka because she was very snippy. She was, she was a teenager back then, right? Mm-hmm. And just to hear that in the live action, to have live action Ahsoka and live action Anakin, like, have a moment. Who knows where it'll go next episode? Maybe it is some evil manipulation shit, but at least for right now, it's just like this, fuck, man, they finally got to do it, and I absolutely loved it.
I know,
and
it's not Anakin's theme, it's Vader's.
I know, but I'm just...
That's all I'm saying.
But I'm hoping that's more of just like... I hope that's more of like a thematic thing rather than a literally like Anakin is like some sort of force manipulation by the dark side.
My final thought on this is Dave... is known to do things in the World Between Worlds, in Mortis, in moments like this, like you're saying, like you've been saying, Tim, where some of these are spiritual lessons that are metaphorical. Mm. And it could be that this is not Anakin as we know him at all. This could be some representation of the force of magic in the universe. It could be something subconscious within Ahsoka's mind that is telling her what she needs to do as a master, right? Mm-hmm. To have your own master show up at a time of like what looks like great defeat in your life.
Especially like right after a moment where she fights Baylan, and Baylan is kind of constantly throwing in her face of like, you had a terrible history of like of a lineage. You're going to pass that on. One of the things he says, it didn't need to be like this, but you don't know any other way, taking a stab at how she was trained by Anakin. Yeah. So,
by the way, Vader's identity, worst kept secret.
How does everybody know it now? Like, what the fuck?
That's very funny. I mean, it has
Anakin
been hella years, right?
About you all the time.
It's been hella years. Everyone's
It's been at least 7 years since he's died. So, and we know from comics or a book that Leia was essentially banned from like the Senate or whatever because it became a whole like hullabaloo of like, she was Vader's daughter. Like that's something that's canon, unfortunately. But
really interesting stuff. I can't wait for next week. Directed by Dave Filoni. You know he's about to bring it. I imagine we're going to get a lot more of Hayden Christensen in that one. But let us know in the comments below what you thought of this episode. And remember, you can follow Anthony Carboni where?
You can follow me everywhere at A Carboni.
And Sage, where about you?
You can find me everywhere on the internet at NotSage or at twitch.tv/PixelCircus.
Until next time, may the force be with you.